Hello, welcome to Modified Role. My name's Jordan, and due to the fact that I have to do all the editing, I will be playing as the host today. With me around this virtual table, we have...
I'm Jen.
I'm Jordan.
And I'm Liam.
And together we are Modified Role. We are a group of people, group of friends, well, I like to call you my friends now. We've been playing together for about a year. About a year now. We came together through RTX, all of us applied to and were accepted to be Guardians for RTX London 2017. I'm originally from Northern Ireland, currently living in England, but we'll go around and say everyone where they're from as well.
All right. I was originally from Minnesota, but halfway through this campaign, I moved to Austin, Texas.
I'm originally from a town called Telford, and since I've come to uni, I'm now living in Cardiff.
And I'm originally from the Shetland Islands, but I've been living in Southampton while at uni.
So yeah, a bit of diversity in the group, which is always a good thing, I think. Hopefully, we'll find out. I think a probably good place to start for the introductions for this session would be for Liam, who is our DM, our very talented DM, to give us a bit of an introduction to the world that our characters currently exist in.
Okay, I'll start with a general overview of the world and work my way down to the slightly more nitty-gritty bits. The world is Athamic. It's a very unique world which is split up into one large continent that curves across the world, or one major large continent, I should say, that curves across the world, split with a large glacier at the top. All of the players find themselves in the Kingdom of Voyage. It's a kingdom that's split into 8 duchies. These duchies have been around for approximately 400 years at this point. It's quite a young kingdom, but they've managed to get started very well. The players themselves are aware of a number of different things. There is a war currently happening. This war is between the Kingdom of Voyage and the Azure Empire, which is off to the northeast beyond the mountains. These mountains are quite an important piece of the landscape because they effectively break up this half of the continent. You have the Kingdom of Voyage to the south-central part of the continent. Then there's the dwarves live in the mountains to the north and to the west, off the west point of the three-pointed branches. Then you have the Azure Empire off to the northeast. You have the swamplands to the west of the kingdom and to the south of the empire, and that actually makes up the main battlegrounds where both of the two armies have come together and are waging war at the moment. There's only one major route through the mountains, which is Weep Scream Pass. This is currently, at least at the beginning of the campaign, protected by a fort, which is where the players originally find themselves.
Excellent, thanks very much. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about religion in general, like the gods and stuff? Because obviously I know you're using a homebrewed pantheon as well.
Of course. As I said, this whole campaign is entirely homebrewed. It's been a thing that I've been developing over, at this point, around about 13 years. Every now and again, little bits and pieces come to my mind, and they get developed and then added in, and the whole world expands. So currently, as I said, there's a very unique religion that is followed. So the religion is made up of 8 gods. There are 4 major gods and 4 minor gods. Each one is linked to one major to one minor. So you've got the god of life, which is Sator. You then have the god of death, which is Rotas. The god of stability, which is Namlik. and the god of chaos, which is Kilmon. Those are the four major gods. The four minor gods are the god of earth, which is Flato, the god of fire, which is Sara, the god of water, which is Lazgur, and the god of wind, which is Brazak. They connect in order. So life to earth, death to fire, stability to water, and chaos to wind. Each of these gods has a duchy named after them in the Kingdom of Voyage, and it's mainly the Kingdom of Voyage that worships these gods. Throughout the world, there are a number of other races that are aware of the gods that the humans in the Kingdom of Voyage worship, and although they do kind of link up in some ways to gods that they worship, there is a difference. So although very similar, they come under different names, and sometimes it's a case of some of the gods that other races worship are melded parts of the same gods. So you may find that the elves, for example, they have the Mother of Gods, which is a mixture of life and death combined. And there are a few others as well. The goblins have their own pantheon too. So as the players go on, they will most likely meet other races and find out about their religions, and perhaps it could cause tensions depending on how religious the players are themselves.
Excellent. So yeah, just a little bit different from the normal Forgotten Realms pantheon. And I will say, we've been playing together for about a year now. Only just twigged with you saying that the duchy share the name with the gods. It kind of shows how much attention I've been paying. Well, with that, it's probably a good idea to introduce our players. So since I'm sort of acting as the host, I will go last. And I think we'll start with Jen. Why don't you tell us about your character?
All right, so I'm playing Silver, who is a Tabaxi ranger. We decided that she was from one of the southern regions, which is a more deserty area where Tabaxi in this land typically are. And yeah, so Silver decided to leave home because she has a lot of, she wants to see the world a whole lot. She is, one of the traits we rolled for was personality traits, and she's driven by a wanderlust that led her away from home. So she's pretty much just along for the ride once she gets up there and decides that she just wants to go adventure and see all these new places. She didn't have anything bad happen for her to leave. She just decided it was time to move on.
Fairly unusual for anyone playing a hero. Just kind of got bored, went out, decided to do things.
Decided to just see what life threw at her and just make new friends, see new places.
I'd like to drop a bit in there. I do remember during your character creation, when you asked about a couple of the locations in the world, and I mentioned that there was the Great Glacier to the northeast. You instantly went, "Ah, that sounds like a great place to go."
Yes. So I kind of kicked off the whole "Let's go see the glacier and cross it," which Liam was not really a fan of because that was not where he wanted the plot to go. But that is Silver's new life goal, to cross the glacier once we get that chance.
Unfortunately, a lot of that discussion is in the unedited episodes, which probably won't air ever because I really don't want to go back and try and fix those.
But I don't think we recorded the first couple either.
Yeah, but we'll cover that at the end when we go over the bits that have been missed. Mm-hmm. But so with that in mind, with the heading towards the glacier, how did you end up essentially imprisoned with the rest of us?
I don't know if we ever fully established why, but my idea for why Silver ended up there is she was just trying to cross to go over to see the glacier, and maybe she saw something that she liked and wanted to grab, and Tabaxi are known for kind of taking anything that interests them. So my idea is that she got caught trying to snag something off one of the guards, maybe, and got thrown in jail.
It's fairly comprehensive enough, I think. Bit of an idea why you were where you were. Mm-hmm. So that's Silver then, Silver the Tabaxi Ranger. So, Jordan, why don't you tell us about your character?
So, my character's Malfor Scaris, a Tiefling Ranger. Yeah, I think I'll start with my background first, because that leads into my traits. So, Malfor originally grew up as a child in a city called Creed, which was the majority of the residents were humans. They weren't too accepting of tieflings as a race. And while growing up, Malfoy was at the brunt of a lot of hate and would often be bullied in school due to the stigma associated with tieflings. As he grew older, he was forced out of the city, as he would receive constant abuse, and his home would be regularly burgled. And so eventually Malfoy found himself a abandoned hut at the mouth of a forest outside Creed. That's where he spent most of his time growing up. He'd spent a lot of time gathering for food and other resources. But one night while in bed, a group of humans found where Malfoy was residing and broke into his home, torturing Malfoy. Ended up cutting off his left horn. His tail is scarred from the torture he received. Most of his possessions were broke and destroyed. Malfoy managed to eventually escape with just his bow. That's the only possession he has from back at home. And since that day, Malfoy has run as far as possible from the city in search of someone accepting of his heritage, whilst also trying to change the perception of tieflings. And that's pretty much the story for Malfoy.
What about your personality traits, bonds, things like that?
So, as his bow was is his only possession, he takes a lot of pride in his bow, and so he doesn't really like anyone coming into contact with it. And if he's in battle, that's what he'll favour of using over anything else. He also becomes a bit anxious around large groups of humans due to what he'd suffered in Creed. In the aid of trying to change the perception of tieflings, his main ideal is he is highly opposed to using spells to cause harm. He feels that that would be the way to change anyone's perception. Because of the hate he received due to the stigma of tieflings being associated with demons and devils, he would act against his ideals when he's around them, and may also act recklessly and aggressive in battle against demons.
Excellent. Thanks very much. Guess we'll finish with my character. I also play a tiefling. Not that I'm copying Jordan or anything, just because we share a name. Whose name is Alreus Iaris, the Bard. For his background, he was part of a travelling caravan full of other misfits and unwantables, tieflings, half-dwarves, half-elves, things like that. His father was a tiefling, and his mother was human. And in Liam's world at least, it takes the infernal bloodline very literally, in that somewhere in his father's ancestry was a literal demon, and that was where Alreus gets his infernal heritage from. Growing up, he never felt welcome anywhere. It was much like with Jordan's character Malfoy. He was subject to a lot of hatred, a lot of distrust, a lot of fear, no matter where he went. As a member of a traveling caravan, they never really settled anywhere. They spent a lot of time going from city to city, village to village. But the hatred and fear for him and his father always seemed to melt away when his father played his fiddle. His father was a musician, and it was him who taught Alreus how to play. To Alreus, it almost seemed like magic. When they entered a city or a village and his father would play for them, the people would just change. Their eyes would go from hatred and fear to wonder and enjoyment. Unfortunately, this only seemed to last as long as the music did. Once it finished, they quite often had to leave fairly quickly, because one or two people would take affront to them staying in their city or village for too long. This affected him greatly, especially because he lost his mother at a very young age, and one of the reasons that she died, it was she had a very treatable illness, but whenever they tried to go to someone for help, whenever they saw that she had paired herself with a tiefling, they quite often would refuse to help at all. He felt bitterness for this, over this for years. His father eventually managed to get through to him and show them that trying to fight people for this wasn't the way to change things. Instead, he had to do it through his own actions. So his aim, much like for Malthor, is to show people that tieflings aren't quite what they imagine. In terms of his personality traits, he is an entertainer. He loves to entertain both with song and story and will take any opportunity to do so. His ideal is to go out and change how tieflings are viewed all over the world. His bond is the fiddle that his father gave him, which is pure black, and he takes with him everywhere, and is the one item he will always perform with. Because he set out on his own in an attempt to improve his abilities and to show far and wide what tieflings were really capable of. Unfortunately for him, his flaw is that his feelings and his anger are always close to the surface, which means that anytime he is judged unduly just because of the colour of his skin or the horns on his head, he can lash out, whether with words or physically. In battle, he prefers to assist his teammates and try and keep back if possible. He's as acrobatic and as talented as he is not particularly beefy and can be taken down very, very quickly if he isn't careful. Alreus was also captured because while out traveling, he was in an area he didn't recognize, and he strayed a little bit too close to the pass that was being guarded by the same people who unfortunately took Silver and Malthor captive, and he himself was also imprisoned. That's pretty much it for Alreus as well. So I think all that's sort of left to do now is to cover what happened in the story up until the first episode, because it is important to note our first episode isn't actually our first session. This is due to a combination of reasons. First of all, we didn't actually decide to start recording until after the very first episode. And during that period, we had a few players who, unfortunately, due to changes in circumstances, weren't able to continue playing with us. So actually, for the first couple of episodes, you will hear us referencing a character who at that point wasn't able to make a few sessions and then eventually had to drop out altogether. So you'll hear us mentioning a character called Grill, a dwarf, who we unfortunately lost very early on. There were a couple of others, but they didn't last long enough to even be mentioned in the later episodes.
Little bit on Grill, just so that people can get an idea of who he was, despite the fact that he may not necessarily be there at the moment. Never know, he may come back as an NPC, who knows. In regards to Grill, or Grill, as seems to be his full name, although I could never really pronounce it properly, so we just refer to him as Grill. Despite the player having left, the character did, as Jordan said, stay around for a while. And so I'll give you a quick rundown so you can get the feel for the character, because you never know, he may return. So Grill is a dwarf from the mountains, paladin at heart. He was actually taken in by the priests at the White Temple, which is found in the center of the three arms of the mountain range. He was abandoned at birth, and the only thing that was left with him was a crystal dagger. He had no name, no clan name, and so because of that he was taken to the White Temple, which is also the Temple of Sator. On his 18th birthday, he was kicked out of the temple due to not showing any kind of affinity towards the preservation of life. And despite the best efforts of all the priests, they were unable to, in harsh terms, brainwash the dwarf, as the temple is a temple generally dedicated to humans. So Grill left and travelled a while. Again, much like the others, finding himself travelling a little too close to one pass that was protected by the military from the Kingdom of Voyage. and thus was captured. But whilst travelling, he found that he would generally take life as and how it came. He would just go with the flow. And he proved to be an interesting companion of the players for the time that he was there.
Okay, well, that's all of our characters, as well as someone else's character. I think now Liam will give us a bit of a rundown of what happened in the first couple of episodes. Take it away, Liam.
The players each awoke to find themselves locked up in a makeshift cell in a fort at the mouth of the Weep Screen Pass. Although they weren't entirely aware of their location as such, they'd been there for a few days. But at this point, they awoke to find that, you know, it was coming up to a mealtime, and they'd been fed regularly. And so at this particular mealtime, when no one had come to feed them, they started to wonder what was happening. And it was at around about this time that everything started to progress. There was a loud explosion, and out of the small window that was in the cellar room that was just at eye level with the floor outside, they were able to see a large hole had been blast out of the palisade wall, and there was some kind of magical fire burning away merrily.
I think the term we used at the time was eldritch.
It was indeed. That is indeed what you used at the time. So with that, they then proceeded to escape this cell to try and find out what had happened. This was quite easy for them, as they were lucky. The wall that led between the cell they were in and the corridor outside had been blasted in and crumbled from the outside with this explosion, which made it quite easy for them to escape. They then proceeded to leave the cell and scout out the basement floor of this fort. In the connecting room, they found their equipment that they'd had with them when they were captured, along with some bread and apples, which, as is always the case with new adventurers, they stocked up with as many apples as they could.
We did take a lot of apples.
You did indeed take a lot of apples. It was very amusing for my part.
I still have 7 apples in my inventory.
But so they stocked up on supplies as best they could, and started to progress through the inside of the keep. Well, they all decided that it might be a bit safer than going outside with the eldritch fire and the explosions, and so they proceeded to head up to the ground floor of the keep, which led them to travel through various rooms. They learnt a few things about a few different characters. About Grill, they learnt that he liked to smash open doors with his head. This seemed to be a very unique thing from his part. He felt that every door was an enemy and it needed to be destroyed, usually with his head, and usually with a running start.
And we also learned that Alreus likes to open doors before people can run headlong into them.
There was that too. There were a number of points where Grill ended up falling flat on the other side of the door because Alreus opened it before he could smash through. About Alreus, they learned that he likes to drink alcohol, as they found a large-ish supply of wine in the main eating hall in this keep.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Exactly. It's just a fact. Just a thing that the other players may have noticed as they were.
I believe I grabbed a couple as well.
They also found a large jade statue to one of the gods, which I do believe Silver found a unique item. Silver, if you'd like to.
I did. I found a ring that it took attunement, and then it ended up having essentially the spell Wish on it, so I could have 3 wishes a day. But they don't always come true.
Yes, I would imagine at some point during the podcast, you will eventually meet the denizen of the ring, shall we say. They had some hilarity with this ring at times. Not a huge amount, but there were some points where it was quite interesting.
And the trick with it is you have to say your wish out loud, but it might not actually happen that way. I think I tried to use it to jump out a window one time, and it didn't quite work.
I do believe that comes up in the first episode, which is going to be interesting when you guys get there. But, so they proceeded from there to continue around the rest of the keep, eventually heading upstairs. Upon heading upstairs, they did come across some rather frightening rats that were larger than they would have expected, and also had two tails and were green and purple in colour.
I'd actually forgotten about the two tails.
Yeah, I do. I think some of you cut some of the tails off at some point.
That may have been our rogue who's no longer with us.
True. May have been the rogue who's also no longer with us. He was a very grumpy rogue.
He was only there for, I think, two episodes or two sessions as well, so that's...
Yeah.
Let's not go over all of his stats.
it's fine. Yeah, he left the party very quickly. But, yeah, so they proceeded to go through the first floor of the keep. For Americans, I assume it's the second floor, because you're strange. Most of us are from the UK. Apologies if it confuses you at times.
Most of being all of it.
I do not apologize at all. Learn the correct way of doing it.
Ah, good. But anyway, they proceeded to go through the first floor of the keep, finding rats and a few other items here and there. Eventually, in one of the rooms, they did discover a secret door that I do believe Aureus found a unique item in.
Yes, well, thanks to our rogue who's no longer with us and his inability to open a secret door, I managed to find an immovable rod. A fairly well-known D&D item, but one that I have put to particularly good use by incorporating it into my bard performances, which you will hear about in some of the, I think probably actually the first episode as well. I'll not spoil it now, though.
No, I think it'll be a lot more interesting when they meet that point. So, a few magical items found, a few monsters killed. I do believe they eventually proceeded to continue up the stairs further. They found a few more rats. They also came across a very unique woman who refused to let them see her face. They still do not know much about this character that they met. And who knows, this person may eventually return. It's all a mystery.
Did not look forward to that. She was very creepy.
Let's just say that wasn't entirely all my doing.
Was that our fault?
Oh, no. Again, information that may become more apparent later on. Perhaps.
Fair enough. Think I have no idea.
But from there, they proceeded up to the top floor of this keep, where they found some skeletons, and well, actually I'll let one of the players describe what they found and then proceeded to do while they were up there.
I think just because Alreus attempted to rectify the solution, or rectify the issue very quickly, I'll describe it. After confronting some skeletons and working our way into what I believe was the, what we assume was the captain's office or room.
Yes, yep.
Is that correct? Yeah. We went through, you know, as any good adventurer does, we attempted to salvage any useful items and raided his desk. In it we found, I think it was a bottle?
It was an urn. Yeah.
It was an urn.
An urn, that was it. It was an urn, a stoppered urn. And when we opened it to inspect inside, a lot of, I think it was sand started pouring out and just would not stop.
I decided to empty it.
One of you opened it and started pouring some sand out to find out what else was in the urn, and it just kept going.
Hello?
And kept going, and kept going. And eventually you heard a very worrying voice.
At which point, I remember this explicitly, the second you described a terrifying voice, you said worrying, I say terrifying, voice coming from the urn, Alreus immediately attempted to throw the urn directly out the nearest window, and failed.
You did indeed. And from that point, I can't remember if you actually saw what came out of it or not.
We did outside. As soon as we realised there was something coming out, we immediately advanced to the rear and ran from the building as quickly as our little legs would carry us. When we were outside, we passed a bunch of, using air quotes here, sleeping guards.
Some of us had less than adequate perception rolls on those guards.
Yes, we weren't looking very closely. We ran at the front gates, and as we left, I think it was billowing smoke and a horrifying demon-like thing came erupting from the captain's office.
From one of the upper floors, although not directly connected to the upper floor itself, it was actually from, despite how little you may remember from that point, it was actually from a floor lower, a portal opened slightly off to the side of the building, and a demon flew out.
That was it. And then it headed southeast.
It did indeed head southeast.
Yeah. It was at that point that we decided that the best thing we could do was to get as far away from there as possible and let somebody much, much more important than us have to deal with this issue.
I think I aimed my arrow at the demon as it was flying out.
I think we all told you not to bother.
You did indeed attempt to stop this creature from, well, who knows where.
Better judgment took over and I didn't fire.
I don't think any of the rest of us particularly wanted to fight a demon at that point.
Yeah, probably a bit too early.
Yeah. But after that, yeah, we struck out towards the nearest duchy in the hopes of letting somebody who actually might be able to do something about this know what had happened.
Now, upon striking out, or just before striking out from this duchy, they did insist that the, as some may put it, worrying person that they'd found inside was not to follow them under any circumstances, even though they'd attempted to befriend them and try and convince them that they would be paid if they would help transport this character.
I think we decided that the creepy woman was just too creepy for us.
That seemed to be the way of your description, yeah. And so you insisted that she did not follow you, and at that point you all left this tower.
Oh, no, I remember. It was your creepy woman was the one collecting rat's tails, because I remember her explaining that she said they were good for alchemy.
Ah, that was it. That was it indeed. I knew there was someone collecting rat tails. Just couldn't remember who. Anyway, as they proceeded towards the closest duchy, a knight came, as night does, and they'd made a camp, and they heard the sound of hooves and also the sound of talking. So they put out their fire and hid, and eventually two shorter-than-average humanoids came into view with a caravan of mules. It was at this point that they met two very unique characters that you will most definitely meet in the coming podcasts.
Yep, they're heavily featured from episode one.
Now, would one of you like to introduce who it was that you met?
Yeah. So, on the road... so, on the road, we eventually came across two dwarves, a father and daughter, named... It was... I know Thema was the girl. What's the dude's name? Drin.
Drin was the father.
Yeah, so Drin and his daughter Thema. And we decided that they weren't as creepy as the other lady, so we decided we'd travel with them because we were going to the same place.
I think it's important to note they were half dwarves.
They were indeed half dwarves. Or are half dwarves, not were. They're not dead.
Yeah, they're still alive.
They also haven't changed races.
They also haven't changed races, although that's not impossible.
I mean, we also have really bad perception. So
this is very true.
Maybe they did.
They could be elves for all we know.
Just very, very short.
But they were very nice. We liked them a lot, and they stuck around for a while. So we traveled to the city with them.
You did.
I do have two very important notes, I feel, for Drin and Thema. The first was that Thema has a magic coffee maker that she uses to help her father, who has problems sleeping. And also, I have it written down, I feel it's important that he may not be with us anymore, but I feel for his character's sake, we should note that Grill fancies Thema, and it's canon.
Yes.
So if he ever returns, NPC or not, I expect that to be included.
That is very true.
We don't know if Thema reciprocates, though. It was never
We don't know yet.
You don't know yet.
Silver was the one who danced with her, so just saying.
There were a number of points during their travel, because although they do eventually make it to the city where the first episode of the podcast will take place. They did actually travel to an inn, a tavern, on the edge of the duchy.
The Emerald Dagger?
Indeed, it was the Emerald Dagger. And it was Drin's cousin that ran the tavern.
Orvith. Drin has a lot of cousins.
Yes, it was his cousin Orvith.
Indeed.
I like how you've spelt that, just to be difficult to say.
It's her name. I mean, come on now. It's no need to be mean.
No, it's just that it's the Orvith. I can't say it without sounding like I have a lisp. Orvith.
But they did indeed meet this person. And they spent some time, well, I think it was a day, at the tavern before heading on. Whilst there, they also met yet another very unique individual. Someone would like to introduce them.
I'll go through this one since I once spoke to him. So we very quickly met a man with a metal hand. After talking to him a bit, I came to the following conclusion. I say conclusions. I found out the following information. His name was Giorgio Siovanni. He was a complete dick. He was human with olive skin, in his 30s, with black hair, comfortable weight, strange accent. What was interesting about him, as I've already said, was that he had his right hand was mechanized. When questioned about it, he said he found it before losing his real one to a dragon. What we found out between him and Olvith complaining about him was that he'd been coming to this inn for a week looking for a very old elf named Dem. We don't know why. All we know is that he'd been irritating Drin's cousin by doing this every single day. And he was from the islands to the south, which, in his own words, were hard to explain. And he described as a place of magic and wonder, sand and sea. He gave Alreus a little... bronze disc, I want to say.
It was a... not necessarily bronze, though bronze in colour. It was a metal disc, though.
Yes, a metal disc. I only have it written down as Giorgio's disc, unfortunately. Which he said would act as a sort of calling card, calling beacon, I think, if we ever met this damn character.
That was, that's what he said.
Yep, he then stepped outside and teleported away. Because, as I previously said, he was a complete dick.
But yeah, other we were than not that, a fan of him.
No. Other than that, while staying in the Emerald Dagger, we did... well, Alreus did a few performances to get us a bit of coin to help in the aims of hopefully paying back Drin for his kindness while allowing us to travel with him.
Another very important piece of information, I think Alreus definitely needs to mention about his time with Drin on the road. I do believe you acquired through mercantile type means a rather interesting item.
Yes, I traded Drin some of the wine that I found, and through some of the gold I previously had, and some that we, again, salvaged from the inn or the keep, I bought what I like to describe, what I like to call, and have written down as a double barrel crossbow. It's essentially just a crossbow which is made with two arms, so it can fire two separate bolts at a time if desired to. Unfortunately, due to me being terrible at editing, we're actually recording this quite a few sessions in now, and I'm pretty terrified that, due to the current circumstances, that Liam is going to take away my favourite toy. Which you will, if you stick around long enough, you will find out why that is quite a few episodes in.
All will be revealed at a later date.
I think I also bought a group of five exploding arrows from Drin as well.
You did indeed. Very well done for remembering. Yes.
Things I have written down.
It does certainly need to be said that Drin and Thema are not so much traveling traders, more at least not in and of themselves specifically. They are traveling traders for their clan in the mountains. So they collect up all the various wares and things that their clan makes, and then they transport them to the various places. Being of half-dwarven race, they, although not necessarily shunned as such, they tend to feel more comfortable when they are not confined to the depths of the dwarven cities. So they prefer the open road, which makes it great for them to travel and sell the wares of their clan. And that is where these items have come from. They are all dwarven made. For anyone who has read the David Gemmell books, specifically Waylander, that is where you will possibly recognize this small hand crossbow from. Yes, I do use some things will appear and will not so much be plagiarized, but at least influenced by things that I've read and watched and listened to.
Like my magic arrow.
I actually didn't realize that.
I apologize now, but unfortunately, as they say, it's easier to stand on the shoulders of giants.
I think just as a little final note, something that I very much enjoy about Thema's character is that she is also quite musically and, I don't know how, very powerful, but she's musically and magically talented. In that any time she has been around Alreus while he performed, she would always join in. I thought that was a very nice touch for her character.
She is, as you say, magically and musically inclined. Although it does actually tend to be more magical than musical. Most of her stuff is actually created through magical means.
That still sounds good, so it's fine.
It does indeed still sound good. I'm surprised she does as well as she does.
It's good rules.
But that pretty much takes us up to the arrival at the city.
With that, feel free to jump into episode 1, and please do give us some feedback, let us know what you think of it. Obviously, the more feedback we get for reviews on iTunes and the like, the more this has become visible, and the more people will hopefully get to see it. And if you really enjoy it, please do go on and tweet us at Modified Rule on Twitter, and share us with your friends, family, pets, and relatives. I said family and relatives. That's the same thing. Just share it with people.
And anyone. Just the last bit on my part. We do also have a wiki for people to look at. It will be slowly updated as and when I have the time to do it, as I do have other real-life commitments as well, unfortunately. As much as I wish I could supply it all to D&D.
And I will include that link in the description for the episode. Final thank yous, as is going to be the case in every episode, to the Storm Weather Shanty Choir for the use of their song Drunken Sailor for our theme tune, as well as venillustration.com. Again, I will link both of these in the description for our wonderful artwork that we're using for our image for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. It's goodbye from me, and it's hopefully goodbye from the rest of these guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
See you next time.